Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
I first heard that song that Sky composed yesterday. And I went, yeah, that probably fits with my talk. Hearing it this morning in person, in my heart, I know it's time to move, to step in faith and trust. I could just stop right there and say, that's what you take home with you today. It's time, and you move in faith and trust. And I'm going to take this off so maybe you can actually hear me. The topic for this morning's talk is a question. Is your commitment greater than your resistance? I've been working with that question for a few weeks. Have any of you been asking yourself, is my commitment greater than my resistance? What I've learned in this time of working with that question is it's not a good question. It leads me into an internal struggle. Commitment, resistance, commitment, judgment, shoulds, all kinds of ways of not being in my wholeness. So if you're one of those people who's been letting that question work you, stop it. It's time for a ceasefire. There's another way, and we're going to talk about that this morning. And I'm going to need some space because I've got lots of pieces of paper here. So often the way that I begin exploring a topic is to look at the concordance, which is this remarkable index to the significant topics and words in the Science of Mind textbook. So I went merrily into my book and opened it to commitment. And all I found, to my astonishment, was committing sins. Nothing at all about making a commitment. So instead, I went to my second expert, Merriam-Webster, and here's what I found. Commitment is an agreement or pledge to do something in the future. I like that because it reminds me that in a commitment, I am agreeing, choosing to do something that resonates and is true to who I am. It's not something opposed. I'm agreeing with myself as a religious scientist about what I'm committing to. And we'll obviously talk more about that. I then went back to the concordance to look and see if Mr. Holmes had anything to say about resistance. There were a few more references than to commitment, particularly the citing of the words of Jesus, resist not evil. Then way at the back in the glossary, which you should really explore if you have the time, it's hidden very back in the 600s of the textbook, I found the following description of non-resistance. And Holmes quotes someone. He says, someone has said that the language of resistance is pain, but non-resistance finds the harmony of the universe and swings into its motion, going with the stream of power which nourishes and protects. Resistance is the offspring of fear and ignorance. Non-resistance is the offspring of love. There it is. That's the way to come to a ceasefire and to recognize that resistance and commitment are not fighting with each other. Non-resistance finds the harmony of the universe and swings into its motion, going with the stream of power which nourishes and protects. Resistance is the offspring of fear and ignorance. Non-resistance is the offspring of love. Non-resistance is a commitment to the underlying good. We find the harmony of the universe and go with the stream of power that nourishes and protects. We find that when we know our values and we align with them, there is something that comes and says, yes, welcome. I am so glad you are who you are. And from that springs commitment. And with that, resistance may inform, but it doesn't hold us back. So let's talk about why this is such an incredibly timely topic for us. And here the title of Sky's song comes to mind. It's Time to Move. For the last 16 or so months, we have been sheltering in place, and now we are coming to a place. Well, actually, I want to talk to you about what that was like. For me, I suddenly didn't know what to expect. I had no routines, no pattern to my days, and even the social interactions that I expected to have were gone. I could describe that as a wonderful spaciousness, to put a smiley face on it, or I could describe it as chaos and unsettling and very, very difficult. The gift of all of that was that I had an opportunity to notice where I was on autopilot. How many of you coming down Highway 12 either automatically go to Oliver's or automatically go to the center without even thinking about it? And sometimes you go into Oliver's when you meant to go to the center. That's autopilot. And one of the gifts of our sheltering in place was to have all of that blown up in our faces, and we had to start reconstructing who we were and what we wanted and needed to do to be ourselves. We can't necessarily get rid of the uncertainty, at least not for a while yet. But what we can ground ourselves in is the values that matter to us, the core of who we are, because that's a solid foundation. So that's what I'm going to talk about, how we use those values, that grounding, to come into our commitments and that power that supports and nourishes and protects us on our way. The tug of war, as you might expect me to say, was all and is all in our minds. It's not a real tug of war. Some years ago, I was in a training on conflict resolution, and the facilitator took the time to explain the core of how their process worked. He said, when people in conflict come to us, they're in opposition. They have this problem, and they're blaming each other for the problem that's right between them. And as they attack the problem, they often attack each other. In conflict resolution, what we get to do with the couple is remind them that it's a problem that they share. And so they step back and look side by side. They look at the problem together. And in that way of looking in partnership, they can come up with a solution that serves them both. That's also how commitment and resistance work together. You're exploring the values that you want to embody in your life. And resistance reminds you of those places where you need to clean things up a little bit or explore a question, address a concern. It's not to block you from committing. It's to make sure you make a real and solid commitment that's yours. Working in partnership, side by side, not fighting each other. So, the goal is to recognize who we are, to recognize what matters to us, and to settle into fully being, radiating that which we already are. I don't know if this has happened to any of you, but sometimes I notice, despite all of my practice and all of my incredible wisdom, that I get a little caught up in fears and anxieties and other stuff. So here's a suggestion from Brené Brown. Don't try and do it all yourself. In her book, Dare to Lead, she describes a process called the Square Squad. Square Squad, you can say that fast if you really pay attention. And what that is you take a 1-inch post-it, and on that little post-it, in legible letters, not minute, microscopic letters, you write the names of those few people that you absolutely trust and whose opinions you value. Those people that don't like you because of your, or in spite of your vulnerability and your imperfections, but because of your vulnerability and your imperfections. I invite you to identify those people and then take a little bit of time, maybe 10 minutes, to reach out to them and appreciate them. Let them know that you love the fact that you can be fully who you are, warts and all, with them. And that they will see you, and now and then they may share something they see that you are not quite able to see. Let me give you an example. I have a close friend, and I was sitting with her complaining about how I really knew I needed to exercise, especially post-COVID, and I just couldn't get into it. I tried and tried, and I had no interest in exercising. And as we were talking, I said, well, you know, for example, my stupid leg, what's the point? And she stopped me and said, Tara, did you hear what you just said? You called your leg stupid. And I said, yeah, of course I did, because I have all these stupid side effects left over from my stroke, and I'm angry. She then asked me to think about that feel or experience that feeling of anger and or grief. And I realized that one of the main reasons I was saying to heck with exercise, there's no point, is that it couldn't necessarily fix this leg. And since this leg happened when I was in my absolute best of my life fitness, hiking the John Muir Trail, how could I possibly benefit from exercising now? Sometimes friends see resistance points that you're not conscious of, and that's a gift. I'm not exercising every day, but I'm definitely exercising regularly because I now know that there's a part of me that was saying, why bother, that needed to be talked to. So here's another thought on what to do when we get caught up in that stuff. So often we make a commitment to change our ways, yes? but stall in the face of old reflexes as new situations arise. When gripped by fear or anxiety, the reflex is to hold on, speed up, or remove ourselves. Yet when we feel the reflex to hold on, that is usually the moment we need to let go. When we feel the urgency to speed up, that is typically the instant we need to slow down. Often when we feel the impulse to flee, it is the opportunity to face ourselves. All of those are gifts of resistance, of that self-inquiry and self-awareness that helps us to ground our commitments realistically and powerfully and personally. Taking a deep meditative breath, Mark Nepo continues, precisely at this moment of anxiety or fear or reaction, can break the momentum of anxiety and put our psyche in neutral. From here, we just might be able to step in another direction. And I love the subtitle of his book. The title is The Book of Awakening. The subtitle, which is again my whole talk in a few words, Having the Life You Want by Being Present with the Life You Have. Having the life you want by being present to, not resisting the life you have. So, I told you that an important element of all of this was getting to know yourself, that that's probably the most important step as you journey with commitment. As people in the science of mind who speak of the fact that each one of us is an individualized expression of the divine, I suggest we start with the big picture. When you reflect on, feel with, think about your notion of the divine, spirit, the transcendent, the all in all, whatever it is for you, what are the qualities of that divinity? What inspires you about that presence? And if that's a little bit too big, think about your heroes and sheroes. What qualities of those important people in your lives do you most admire? Because a key part of being who you are is letting your wholeness, your unique wholeness, come alive in you. Some of you have undoubtedly read Dr. Edwards' book, Ordinary Goodness. He has a process in there where he invites us to write out what we believe in. I suggest you try it. His initiative step is to imagine that you were invited to a national program on television or perhaps a TED Talk. You had 15 minutes to share what you believe in. Not the how and the why and your long story of your life, but what inspires and engages you, what guides you on your way. What do you believe? What do you believe about those values that you just identified? Or if you want to jump in before you do that work, though I suggest you do it, use Dr. Edwards' four key values: compassion, kindness, goodness, and faith. What do you believe about compassion, about kindness, goodness, faith? What do you really believe? You know, most of us don't take the time to think about that, let alone share it with other people. Sometimes we do as parents or grandparents. Once in a great while, perhaps as a mentor or a leader. It's actually something every single one of us needs to do. If we don't know the compass points, how can we possibly know where we're going or how to get there? And I admit, it's not just something you sit down with a cup of tea or a glass of wine and say, okay, I believe da-da-da-da-da, and I believe da-da-da-da-da, poof, done. You really go in. You really feel into what matters to you. Because you see, it's out of that that your commitments grow and come alive. Commitments aren't about what you should do, what your parents told you success was, what your boss says is the only way to get things done. Those imposed shoulds die just like most of our New Year's resolutions. They're not coming out of us, who we are, what we care about. They're externals, and we can just push them away because they're not in the heart of who we are. Another way to dive deeply into understanding what we're about is something I just learned over the weekend called a soul walk. It was a part of an interview with a man, Jonathan Gustine, who identifies himself as a whole person midwife. Think about that. A whole person midwife. And he said, I do not go around catching babies. That is not my thing. But to help people discover and bring forward their full selves, that he loves to do. So here's what a soul walk is. I'll share it with you by sharing what I went through as I did it yesterday. When you go on a soul walk, you want to take with you an important question. For me, it was, what's the wholeness of my talk going to look like? And I tell you, I did this yesterday afternoon. And I was a little bit concerned about how this would all gel, but that's why I was taking a soul walk. And what Jonathan suggests to us is we look with different organs of perception than we may be accustomed to looking with. We're all really, really good at analyzing and thinking about and figuring out answers to questions. And he's not saying don't do that, but he's saying look with different eyes sometimes. And the first one is our skin. This is our largest organ. And so, kind of shrugging into it, I walked and I felt and experienced with my skin. At first I was I don't know how to do this. But then I noticed the temperature, it was hot. I noticed the breezes. And then as I came into that awareness, I recognized that there was this container for spirit that was allowing me to walk in the world. And that was a wonderful experience to have. The next step, next perception is with the heart. What are you feeling? What emotions are real for you as you explore whatever your question is? And for me, not surprisingly, I was incredibly enthusiastic about sharing all of this with you this morning. I love being in this community. You are my greater family, and I just adore each one of you. So that feeling was there, and I know that's a piece of the wholeness of this talk. Next is gut. What does your gut have to say about the question that you're holding? We often, have gut feelings and check in with our gut. Do it intentionally, not spontaneously. What did I find? I found some butterflies. I always have butterflies when I speak. I also found a real grounding in knowing that Spirit's the one actually doing this talk, not me. And so those were gifts. The last two elements were ones that I wasn't quite as familiar with. The first was to perceive through wild nature. I can do that in the Sierras really easily. It wasn't quite the same in the JC neighborhood. But what that invokes is a mindfulness. Noticing the sky was actually bluer than I'm used to seeing it when I walked yesterday. The birds were raucous. It was this crazy, very scraggly, some kind of evergreen that was decorated all over the place with pine cones that probably weren't pine cones, were fir cones or something. But there was such richness and vastness in which I am, not separate from it, but with that. Again, a lovely awareness. Final one, wild imagination, which when Gustin talked about that yesterday, I wasn't really quite sure what he meant. I'm still not entirely sure, but I'm getting a whisper of it. Wild imagination means going to that place within as if you were watching a movie screen and noticing images on that screen. Then rather than analyze them, say, well, this means that and da-da-da-da-da, just notice and be in dialogue with them and see what they have to say. I'm afraid I was too distracted to really do that yesterday, but I'm very intrigued to follow on with it and do it soon. So that's some suggestions on getting to know what matters to you. I'm going to share a little bit more and then dive into a Holmes reading because, as always, I have way more to talk with you about than I have time to say. So, once you identify what matters to you, then you want to bring it alive in a way of commitment. For a lot of us, we go from the I can't do anything to I have to do everything, and we don't find that sweet spot somewhere between nothing and everything. I invite you, as you get to know your values that are at your heart, to find those sweet spots where your heart sings, where you feel, oh, yes, this is it. And they may not be huge. In fact, I guarantee they won't be huge. Because if they're huge, you're going to be stranded out here trying to realize a commitment that isn't going to happen in a way that supports you. Find the sweet spot, not nothing and not everything, but that sweet, centered space of alignment. So, skipping a whole bunch of pages. I hope one of the things that you take from this is that commitment is not something you get and there it is, set an end point. Commitment is a way of being, and it's alive. Your values may last you a lifetime, and your commitments may blossom and shift and melt away and unfold in myriad ways. Because they're alive, they're responsive, they're mentors or friends, not jailers. So be gently present to your commitments and align with them in your heart and your essence. And always remember, it's not about what other people need you to do or think you should do. It's about you being the amazing being that you are. I need to do a little plug before I close with Holmes. Can't resist. In August, I have a 5-week class on spiritual principles and practices. It is not going to be about memorizing our principles and then doing what we should do in practice. No way, Jose. It is about leaning into the principles and finding out which ones are really key for you. Which ones really matter to you? And you don't have to accept all of them or think all of them are important. When you find those few principles among the many that matter, then we're going to talk about how we embody what we care about. That's what we're up to in August. So if you want to spend 5 weeks exploring that, please come. I'd be delighted to see you in class. So, closing with Ernest. We use the second edition of the Science of Mind textbook. There's an earlier edition that is rich in many ways. And in exploring it, I found a section on what Holmes calls concentration. And I like the tone and the level of it. So I invite you, if you're willing, to close your eyes and just listen to what he has to say. The simplest practice for concentration is always the best. Nature always works along the lines of least resistance, and mental power is only a force of nature and should always be thought of in a natural way. If you wish to concentrate on some particular idea or thought, bring the attention to it, then hold it there, but without effort. At first, you may find that the thought wavers. Do not oppose this, but mentally brush the wrong thought aside, much as you would brush a fly from the face with a hand. Be sure that you make no great mental effort. Feel at ease and at peace, gently bringing the thought back to the point of attention. Easy, natural, without effort or mentally trying. You choose your commitment, the one that sings in your heart, calls to the essence of who you are. You can hold it as long as you desire. As I read earlier, non-resistance finds the harmony of the universe and swings into its motion, going with the stream of power which nourishes and protects. Non-resistance, commitment, is the power of love. Please join me in prayer. Easily, gently, with trust and deep love, I settle into that place within which knows there is only one power, one presence, one life, infinite, creative, wise, and most essentially love. That one is everywhere, so that one is at the heart of who I am, is the essence of each person hearing these words. Every single one, no exception. I know for us this day that that harmony of the universe, that power that protects and nourishes, is alive and present, moving in through and as us in each and every moment, that we open to it, we delight in it, we are grateful for it is that which guides us to the full magnificence of who we already are. In gratitude for this truth, in celebration of this truth, I release it into the law of yes, into the law of love, knowing it so. And together we say, and so it is.